What's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about insights as well as what makes strategists happy, and I'll give you some updates. I want to reflect about some of the adventures that I've been up to, intellectual adventures, although I've done a ton of travel this year as well. But first, I want to say a big thank you to everybody who spoke at, hosted, helped to organize or attended the Sweathead Do Together. I know I haven't posted too much, at least podcast-wise, about the Do Together. It happened this week, Wednesday and Thursday, 6 hours, hosted by Vanessa Toro and Lexi Perez. We had Derek Walker, Rosie Jacob, Rob Estratino, Vicky Ross with Danny Too, Heather Lefevre, David Moore, Priyanka Kanse, Cameron Day, Max Salenum, and Chirag Kushalani. I think that's everybody. And it was great. I think if you've never been to a Sweathead event like this before, the vibe often surprises people, I think mostly in a good way, unless you're just a very formal kind of conservative person, because people talk very truthfully, very honestly. I got to say that I thought I'd red-pilled the strategy world, and then Denny Too, who's currently the global CMO of IMAX, but has been a strategist, a planner in the UK and in the USA. I believe he led some planning group there at B Sky Sport in the UK, but is now very much global CMO of IMAX. Massive job, lots of releases. Vicky Ross was very kind to bring him in, and whenever is more than red pill. He just laid it out. It was really incredible identifying the mindset of strategists, and for how a lot of people, not everybody, but for a lot of people, it can be this peripheral role where people don't necessarily feel respected. And as a CMO, he's like, sometimes I'm in rooms and I can see that the strategist isn't speaking up or isn't necessarily, you know, respected within their own organization. He talked about the loneliness of the job, which I think a lot of us identify with, because we're often in our heads. And when we're in our heads, it means that we're not in our bodies, and potentially we're not kind of with other people. Yeah. So that was super interesting. I mean, every talk was beautiful. And so if you attended, thank you. If you spoke, thank you. We'll share the videos with the people who attended and spoke. We might be able to cut some of them up into little highlights that we'll post on Instagram at Sweathead, or even on my Instagram. So that was beautiful. Just reflecting on the year, I'm sort of thinking about 2024 as well, for what I do, for what Sweathead does. It's been a funny year. Now, Dot, who Yarantia, who really helped put the Do together. We've been working together since 2020, when the world really did feel like it was falling apart. And I think for a lot of people, it still feels that way. And I know a lot of you and your communities are going through all kinds of strife right now, whether it's war, genocide. A lot of the places I visit, the young people are really trying to get out of their countries because of either narco and mafia, drug mafia situations, because they believe their old politicians have been bought out by a couple of big countries, or because they're in these regions where a couple of big countries are trying to gobble them up and have been gobbling them up. And so I know there's a lot of stress out there. And yet a lot of the events that I've been to this year, they've really rejuvenated me. And I have to say, I know it's dark out there, but I feel like it's been one of my favorite years. You know, all the events, I've been to Mexico City, Bulgaria for DigiTalk, and doing some work there actually, with an agency, a very cool agency called The Other Half. I made this little video about 3 hours south of Sofia, Bulgaria, about a winery that we're working with. You can find that on Instagram if you're interested. Been to Ecuador, did 3 events in Ecuador, and a little vertigo update. This is so embarrassing and slightly funny. So I know I've told this story a couple of times, but when I arrived in Ecuador, I got a day or so down in Guayaquil, which I call Guayacage, because everyone lives in cages. But down there, they call it Guayami. And I'm like, no, I don't know. It's a cool city, but a lot of issues happening there, and a lot of issues happening in Ecuador. A few politicians have been killed by narcos, because I think Colombia is trying to move a lot of the drugs through the ports of Ecuador. So Ecuador's really struggling. They had curfews a couple of years ago, I think, it could be more recent than that, but I think through parts of COVID they had curfews because a lot of people were dying on the streets, and then there was violence. So I believe people had to be back in their places by like 8 p.m. Anyway, I was in Guayaquil, and then we went up to Cuenca, which ends up being, I'm trying to remember the numbers. Was it like maybe, let's call it 3,000 meters. It's give or take 500, but say 3,000 meters up. What's that? 10,000 feet or so. But to get there, we had to go even higher. So I think we hit 4,000 meters. I could be getting this wrong. And then they got me out of the car, the lovely people at Reinvention Masterclass. Shout out to you as well. Done a few events, four events now in two countries with you this year. It's been awesome. But I got out of the car at the top of this hill at a place called, what is it called? Las Clacas or something like that. And immediately felt dizzy, thought I was going to vomit. And for the events I was doing that week, the team then brought oxygen tanks because I was running out of breath while delivering these masterclasses. When I got back, the vertigo kind of stayed with me to the point where if I was watching YouTube and there was like a drone shot, I would get a little bit sick in the stomach. And then the weirdest and kind of funniest thing happened about 3 weeks ago. Some shorter people walked past me and I felt vertigo. I felt dizzy. So I don't know. Hopefully I can grow out of it. But it's slightly amusing and a little bit frustrating. I was in Iceland with the team at PIPA, TBWA. Really, really interesting. Never been to Iceland before, but I was there last week, actually, this time last week. They had an event called Cross Midlun. I believe that means cross media. I could be getting that wrong. That was in Reykjavik. It's Iceland spectacular. We were kindly taken out two nights. On one night, we went to some geothermal spas about an hour north of Reykjavik. It was pitch black. It was dark, probably around 4:30 or so, maybe 4. I thought it was going to be we were going to have shorter days, but we actually had okay days. Anyway, so we're in these geothermal spas for a couple of hours, just having a chat with all the other the speakers and the team at TBWA. It was really, really cool. And then did some talks and masterclasses and had a beautiful meal with the team again. It was really, really beautiful. And the week before that, I was in Lima, Peru. I wanted to record podcasts in these places, but I just didn't really get the headspace or feel the vibe, whatever that means. Lima, Peru, I was in Miraflores, which is obviously one of the richer areas. And we had a great event. I did a very long walk, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 hour walk actually around Miraflores and Barranco and then down to the beach. And physically something about Lima, at least where the beach is, it reminds me a little bit of Bondi Beach in Sydney, but as if Sydney was built onto Bondi. It is, they're different visually, but they're kind of on mirror sides of the Pacific Ocean. So yeah, something it reminded me a little bit of Sydney, and every now and then I get nostalgic or sentimental. I'm sentimental for Sydney. So that was Lima. I had a beautiful time out in Georgia. I know I posted a couple of podcasts, was trying a couple of different formats, interviewing people at 1 a.m., interviewing people while walking around. I think, you know, just thinking about, as we are in the sixth year of the Sweathead podcast, thinking about what formats I want to play with next year. Really want to do something on YouTube, but a little bit intimidated. And I realize it's, you know, it's a job for a person, possibly even a team, to do it really, really, really well. It's a full-time job. And speaking of which, yeah, I think still reflecting about next year. And if you've been to our events, if you enjoy this podcast, please always feel free to DM me on Instagram with thoughts, feedback, suggestions. There's so much noise in the world that I think it's actually a little bit challenging to do strategy in this environment. For your own business, especially business that deals with strategy. But I think we were very ambitious with our programming this year. We were aiming for 8 masterclasses. We did the Sweathead Get Ahead. We did WTF, the Effectiveness Festival. We did the Do Together. We did a summer camp. And all the experiences, in my point of view, and I think for a lot of people who attend, I love them. They're beautiful. They're a different vibe from most of what's out there. I'm desperate to do stuff in a room with people. I love to try to work out how to get people together, because I had such good fun in Brazil at Hacktown and really good fun in Georgia at Black Sea. And I just want to work out how to bring that vibe. I don't know, maybe New York's a little bit too expensive. It's too corporate. Everyone's so special and important here. So maybe the idea is not to do it in New York, but we'd love to work out how to bring the vibe of those festivals to the US in advertising, because I feel like a lot of the events that I go to, everyone's too serious, too important. Having said that, was also, I know I'm doing a little bit of an update, but you know, this format is the format that helps you get asleep, right? I know that. Hosted a panel at Advertising Week in New York about 3 or 4 weeks ago, binging with Babish on Andrew Ray was part of the panel, and we had people from the Made In Network as well as the botanist Jin. And we ran a little experiment, and I think for those of you who speak, I don't do, like, I get invited to speak, but I like to play with different formats. And so the format that we worked on, and it wasn't like super revolutionary, because you're still limited to a stage, there are chairs on a stage, people need to film it so they can use it later. But, you know, we were like, well, what if we made it just a little bit like a YouTube video and many YouTube videos, the challenge-based ones, there's a mission or a challenge, a main one, and then a side mission. And so the way that we set up that session was that our mission was to show everybody what it's like or how it can be like to work with a creator in a more meaningful way, not just buying readouts, mid-rolls, etc., but to really work with them in a more meaningful way. And then the side mission was we had Andrew Babish jump off stage for a few minutes to make a video, and then he came back. Also based on a brand that was shared in the audience. So, you know, that sort of raises the stakes. What's going to happen? Could he do something good in 10 minutes? And he came back on stage and presented this video that he made at the back. So that's how we structured that. I'm sharing that just because I know a few of you will do talks or pitches, and it's just fun to mess with the format. It's fun to mess with the format. What else has been happening? Maybe that's enough of the updates, but I think the thing for Sweathead next year is we'll simplify what we do. I'm trying to work out whether to offer more 4 to 6 or maybe even 10 week courses. So if you've got strong opinions on that, let me know. What I do know is that there are just so many brains that we can help bring into public, but it's really tough building a business model around them. The business model that mostly exists, and this is not a diss, the business model that mostly exists is event and even educational institutions will get people to do things either for free or not really pay people that much. It's not that we pay a lot, but since we started to bring people in for events, we usually try to pay people equally, transparently. Sometimes we do a revenue share. We did that for the Do Together this year. Last year, we guaranteed a minimum. We did not guarantee a minimum this year, and it was a softer year for us for sure. But we're playing with all these things. But it's a hard business model. It's a really hard business model. And you never know if you're bringing in speakers or teachers whether they'll really support you. You won't really know if people are excited to learn from that person until you put the tickets up for sale. And sometimes maybe you see some biases around people from certain countries maybe bringing out more people, but then is it the topic? Is it the agency they're in? Is it what's going on? And yeah, it's been really interesting. I'm hearing some tough stories out there. I think the pattern that I'm hearing, and you know, I compare notes with people who run agencies. I think I can say this because I'm not going to get him in trouble. You know, I was comparing notes with David Tiltman, who to me is the boss of WARC, WARC, last night in New York, and various other people. Sorry for name dropping, but, you know, I have to introduce characters into the equation here. But what the pattern that I've been hearing is Q1 was essentially a write-off, and I'm talking more about agencies here. Q1, essentially a write-off, not great. Q2 was flat, down. And then Q3 was a bit of a non-event because you kind of get summer happening. And then I think a lot of us were waiting for back to school, which in New York is the first week of September. And so I was thinking, yeah, maybe I could bring on a person to help me with a few things and blah, 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 blah. And then we turned the corner for back to school and it didn't really pick up in a meaningful way. And then obviously there's more strife in the world. I'm going to talk vaguely about that. You know, I'm not getting into politics and war and things like that today. But that tends to affect the mood of, well, and rightly so, affect the mood, but also that mood can affect business. And then people, it seems, are being laid off again based on stuff I'm seeing on LinkedIn and things that I'm hearing about. And I'm, you know, I hear from people who've been long-term unemployed as well. So mood isn't great. But to be optimistic, and I don't like saying that, but I think if you have a strategic mind, if you have a creative mind, if you run your own business, whatever it is, those three things, if you're one of those things or all of those three things, you have no choice but to make the next thing. Like, you can't sit on your hands. You could do a sabbatical. You could meditate. You could go for long runs. You could hike. Yeah, you can do all of that. But if you're going to stay in the capitalistic game that we're in, you have to keep going. You have to keep launching. And usually when the system rattles like this, two things happen, at least in the strategy community, or let's call it advertising and marketing community. One is people start to launch a lot of podcasts, Substack newsletters, or just newsletters in general, or they start to post a lot online. And so I'm seeing a lot of that. It's always interesting to see who lasts. But people panic. They're like, I've got time on my hands. I need to build some kind of presence. So you see a lot of launching of things. I feel like I'm seeing that. And then the flip side of that is you also see a lot of meanness. And it seems like always a lot of drunk meanness in the evenings in England or Europe. And they're like, why? There are just other ways to be. So those two things tend to happen when the economy shakes like this. I think one thing that's really difficult is to know whether where this is like how structural are the changes happening? How structural are the changes? You know, is there a dip that's happening right now? And also, by the way, I know that there are individuals and agencies that are crushing it right now. A lot of the agencies that are doing really good work are growing, and I think it's a lot of the older agencies that we're going to continue to see merge. And, you know, a lot of talk about how creative agencies or advertising agencies in the holding model are not really growing much. You know, so there will be mergers. People will try maybe different business models, although could be a little bit late for that, especially when you're already big. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So some people doing really well, I think majority really struggling. And so if that's you, get to work out how to stay active, how to have some routine in your days. It's hard when your mood plummets, especially if you're in winter right now and the days are shorter and it's darker, etc. But there's a lot of people going through this. Strategists don't always talk about it. Hopefully you can find some people to talk about it with. Obviously we have a Facebook group and you know, we do events as well. So there you go. There's all of that. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about insights. This stuff pops up. I decided to do one more masterclass this year. It's happening on Wednesday, December 6th. I did announce it as December 7th, but it's Wednesday, December 6th. And in the show notes, I'll put a link to there's a download you can get, 45-page free ebook, which includes the chapter from my book on insights. My book, I believe, has sold about 7,500 copies now. I opened it up on Amazon Kindle in a few countries. I'm kind of blown away. I was aiming for 5,000. We're at about 7,500 now. And that thing and the courses I build around it helped feed my family through 2020, 2021. And, you know, I've really been building this body of IP for 7+ years now. I was just thinking about this because I was talking to somebody about it. But I would say like the Four Points itself started to merge between 7 and 10 years ago. And then 7 years ago, I was invited to do a talk in Prague, and I had just set up shop independently. And I was like, I don't really want to do a talk. I like running people through exercises. I've got this Four Points thing that I've sort of been sitting on. And so I created a 1 hour session for about 400 people. And that 1 hour session and the Four Points has really set me up for the past 7 years. I'd say the next big click for the Four Points, and I'm sharing this not so much to talk about the Four Points, but just showing you what life outside of agencies can be like if you want to be some kind of entrepreneur, but also where the entrepreneurship builds around your own expression. I'd say, so Prague was a really big click there. And then I sat down to write my book four years ago, almost this week. No. I'm getting all of this wrong, aren't I? So 5 years ago, I started to write the book. And 4 years ago, yes, 2019, end of 2019, New York Marathon Day, I went and filmed a video for Kickstarter. And that led to, and thank you if you're involved with that, raising $37,000 for the book. You know, I did pay some solid money for design and some solid money for editing, simple line edits for the record. Kept my voice. And so that was like the next click for it. So anyway, in the show notes, you'll be able to find a link to this 45-page ebook on insights, which includes the chapter from my book. And then December 6th, I'm doing a masterclass, and I'm going to do it for cheaper than a lot of the masterclasses that we've been doing, because this year's what? It's what? And you can find tickets on the Sweathead website. So this is from, if you want to find this, you can find this on Instagram. I'll post it to LinkedIn soon, and I'm sure I'll get the dark side of what I mentioned when the economy rattles with the strategy community. There'll be all kinds of like, man, why are you talking about insights again? Blah, 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 blah. But whatever, whatever. So shocking truths about insights and advertising. I tend to only use the word once, and not in like a really strict dogmatic way, but I try to use it once or not very often on a project, because it's jargon. And the more you use jargon, the less power it has. But I also try to use it specifically, and people will have different takes on insights, because there are different kinds of insights in various agencies: brand insight, consumer insight, cultural insight, category insight. It's all good. For me, I tend to use it with the definition of an insight being an unspoken human truth. And I just recommend that, I say this pretty much in all the talks and classes that I do, you're going to use jargon. It's okay. Try not to use too much of it. But what can really help is to sit down with your colleagues, clients, however you set up, and just get the jargon on a piece of paper, and then define how you use it, or how you will use it together. And again, that's not about being authoritarian or fascistic with language. It just helps teams work better together. So, you know, if I'm saying the word insight, it means something quite specific to me. And I think there are lots of insights around. I think you could watch a 5-minute comedy, stand-up comedy set and hear lots of insights, maybe 5 to 10. But then I also have peers, friends who I respect a lot, who are like, oh, it's impossible to find a real insight. You could only find one, or you might only find one or two in your career. But I feel like they're using the word in a really, like, even more profound way than I would use it. You know, something like a Carl Jung-worthy insight, rather than, you know, how someone picks their nose or uses toilet papers and why that happens and why they do that. So, yeah, get your jargon onto a piece of paper so you can all work better together. And hopefully that'll save you a little bit of pain. But for me, insights are unspoken human truths. I like to focus on the individual. I won't really situate the insight in the 4 points framework today, but often I do. And for me, in the 4 points framework, the insight has a particular role. Insights, lots of definitions. If I was to paraphrase some research that Jonah Berger did on when he was looking at the articles of the New York Times and which ones went viral and why, there was a nice phrase that I have sort of stolen or butchered, but essentially people share content that reveals something awe-inspiring about them and the world around them, or we share content that reveals something awe-inspiring about us and the world around us. I quite like that when we're thinking of insights, that they reveal something awe-inspiring about us and the world around us. Now, awe doesn't mean it's something that's totally epic, but there's a lot of good research on awe, A-W-E. It's worth looking into. Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, has published quite a bit on it. If you go to Google Scholar, I'm pretty sure you can find some of his research. And from memory, what he talks about is like you could walk into a big office and there's a big desk and a really, you know, important person. That creates a sense of awe. You could walk into an amazing church. There's a sense of awe. You could look at a huge mountain. Sense of awe. You could be in the middle of the forest. Sense of awe. You could look at a dog or a puppy. Sense of awe. And awe, it's a little bit like how academics define religiosity when they're looking into psychedelics, where one of the elements of having a spiritual or slightly religious experience in a psychedelic sense is feeling connected to the universe and realizing that there are a lot of ways to be connected, a lot of ways to see the universe, etc. And it's, you know, sort of what's going on with insights. But having said that, I think one of the things that strategists can struggle with is that they want their insight to sound super intellectual, and that's often where people get lost. Also, if you're a little bit new to this, perhaps the things you're calling insights are slightly obvious as well, and that could be okay. It could be okay. The only point of any of this for the advertising strategist is to help the work be better at the end of it, the creative work, the campaign, etc., the brand. So this stuff matters until it doesn't. So here are a few, I think, generally accepted truths about insights. So you hear this a lot. I'm going to get into all the cliches. Insights are different from observations because they're more profound, less obvious. Now, there is a DIKW pyramid that is data at the bottom, data, data, data. Data at the bottom, information, knowledge, and wisdom. Data is essentially nothing until it gets used, at which point in this model it's information. And things can kind of travel up this pyramid based on how profound they are, but some of that's objective and some of it's going to be subjective. This is something that I think a lot of cultures struggle with. I do a lot of work with large companies, and as these large companies bring in strategists, creative teams, etc., from the outside, often these people are reporting into more traditional business minds who don't quite get this work, and often who are suspicious of creativity. Maybe they feel threatened by it. Maybe they think it's just what kids do. But I see these things up close, these dynamics. And one of the things that people will struggle with in these more traditional organizations is little lateral leaps that might put together three statistics from a survey that you did, two quotes from some interviews that you did, and all of a sudden there's this little sentence that we'll call an insight that has a slight lateral leap. And I think people are like, hang on, isn't the statistic the insight? So again, if you're new to this, I'm not talking to people who've done this for a long time because you know all of this, but if you're a little bit new to this, insights are different from observations, but sometimes it's hard to tell because you could be new to a space, you could be observing something that you think is really, really interesting, but the audience or the team you're working with is like, yeah, that's literally the most obvious thing about this. So it just takes some time. And the way that you dig deeper is you ask why. And I know that's one of those annoying things that you hear and everybody says it at any strategy conference. Someone will say, just ask why a lot, or what's causing that. And you keep digging in basically to try to get somewhere that's raw and to land on a sentence that people might actually react to when you share it with them. Another generally accepted truth, I think, is you don't always need an insight in a creative brief. I know there are a lot of people on LinkedIn and Twitter, et cetera, like strategists and insights, like blah, 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 blah. You don't need that at all. It's true. You don't necessarily need it, but if you're a strategist writing a creative brief, if writing a creative brief is key to the job, which it is for a lot of people, but also there are conversations around the work as well, which are also really, really vital. You need something in them, some kind of revelation or something provocative. And chances are many of the times that thing could be a strong problem statement. It could be a provocative what if. Often those things will feel insightful. All right. So I understand why people are like, you don't have to have an insight in a brief. Here's all this amazing work that didn't have an insight in the brief. Yeah, it's true. But, you know, that's also almost an argument for not having a strategist involved at all. And I'm not saying advertising strategy is just about an insight. But if it's just about a creative team dramatizing a feature, which is often highly effective, then the strategist is arguing against some of the things that strategists do is arguing maybe for there to not be any need for a strategist. I think that's relatively true. Third point is if there isn't an insight in the creative brief, the creative team will probably find one. Now, it can be hard, especially when you're starting out, but honestly, it's not just when you're starting out. It can be hard to get traction with some creative teams at all, let alone with a single-minded proposition or a strategy statement, let alone an insight. And sometimes you'll feel like you're banging your head against the wall. And later, you know, years later, maybe you go back and look at the work and realize, okay, it wasn't as good as it could have been. Maybe the creative teams you're working with just don't really want to work with a strategist. Maybe they don't know how to. Maybe their sense of the way they approach their work, maybe the way that they approach their work, they would like to be the one who finds the insight or some kind of revelation, some way to really flip or take their ideas further. So that can happen. That can happen. Fourth is, even if there is an insight in the creative brief, many creative teams will ignore it. I just talked about that. That sucks when that happens, but also you've got to look at yourself and you know, wonder whether it was any good. You got to start there. And then also, it's very nice to have ideas come back that are on strategy, but don't forget that the goal really is to be effective and to make effective work together. And sometimes the strategist has to give way or give up certain things for that to happen. Personally, I believe that even if you're an angry, drunk shit poster on LinkedIn talking about how strategists talk about insights way too much and you don't need them ever, which is fine, insights and understanding what they are can help you in life. It can help you in writing, it can help you in your career, just really developing this practice of trying to see patterns in data, patterns in observations, and adding some reading about psychology. And it can help you just understand the world in a deeper way, help you write in a more meaningful way, help you present in a more meaningful way. So I'm not super dogmatic about any of this. I just think they're a useful thing to try to understand and to try to understand different people's perspectives on. I think they can help you individually, let alone, you know, there is a little bit of research out there. Dr. Casey Windells at our Do Together, I think last year or the year before, maybe 2 years ago, talked about some research that came from New Zealand and Australia looking at insights. So it was a bit self-serving in a way, not for Dr. Casey Windells, but for the research looked at or asked planners, I believe it was planners or creative teams, to rate the emotionality of certain insights. And then I think they compared the ratings to the effectiveness of the work. You can probably find that research on Google Scholar. If you look at emotions in or emotional insights in advertising, you could put that phrase into Google Scholar and you'll probably find it. All right, I want to talk about what makes strategists happy. I was reflecting about this. Razvan Madassel posted on LinkedIn something about what makes a strategist happy. And again, this theme of feeling a little bit invisible at work, often not being added to credits for awards, for example. That's just one. That's one. I don't mean to be petty, but there are definitely things set up still in the advertising system in 2023 that can make a strategist feel marginal, let's just say. So I was thinking about, well, what are some of the things that make strategists happy? And I'll quickly go through seven of them. One, when an idea from the creative department actually hits the brief, if the brief is any good. That's always beautiful. I remember when I first started writing creative briefs, I think I was okay at them. Our boss used to, we had a few quarters where the boss would rate the briefs on a scale of 1 to 10, which I think is kind of useful. That was at Leo Burnett. Leo Burnett had this whole, had this whole thing of rating ideas as well. So creative leaders would get together every so often in different regions and they'd bring their own work and then they'd go around the room rating each other's work for a day or two. I think it's good. It sets clear and high expectations because you don't want to turn up empty-handed. You get feedback about what's good and what's not good. I think it's good. It's good. Especially if it's not punitive, if you don't get punished for being not good. But over time, if you don't improve, you're probably going to lose the job. So my point is that sometimes I write briefs, usually with creative teams. I try to every now and then. When I tried to collaborate, some people would be a little bit difficult. I don't think I've ever heard someone say that's your job, but it was implied once or twice with some, you know, more prickly creative teams. Others were very open. They preferred it because they didn't like it when a strategist just worked by themselves and then would surprise them in the briefing. People don't tend to like that very much. I think most creative minds will initially want to reject anything that's said to them. Like, no, I can do better. I can find something better. But also I remember this time for a big Canon campaign where the copywriter, he circled a phrase that was maybe in the audience description or maybe even in like the project title, the way I'd named it. And he's like, this led us to this idea. So it wasn't an insight. It wasn't a problem. It wasn't a strategy statement. It was something that was a little peripheral on the brief that led somewhere. I'm like, well, I guess that's sort of job done, as long as we're happy, as long as it's effective. So it does feel good when an idea from the creative department actually hits the brief. Two, when you win a pitch and the client says strategy was part of the reason for the win, I think I'm still not a fan of like losing a pitch and the client says the strategy was great, but the ideas weren't. That always feels weird. That always, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. If you stay any time in the industry, that will happen to you, but don't take it as a full compliment. It always feels a bit of a lie, a little passive aggressive, not fully true. I don't know. But yeah, when you win a pitch and the client says strategy was part of the reason, and then they want you and your team in the room, oh, it's beautiful. Makes the strategist happy, right? 3, seeing a client's career bloom because of your contribution. I feel like that's happened to a few people. Not everyone I've worked with, but a few people I've worked with. It's always nice when that happens. And also, I think some of the other strategists I've worked with, I've seen their effect on clients. And it can be with an insight. It could be with just a really well-executed strategy, or the way that the client and the strategist were able to help each other navigate each other's companies. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. 4, seeing fellow strategists' career bloom because of your time working together. That makes me happy. I love that. When I took over a team, maybe 12 strategists a bunch of years ago, I said in the first meeting, I was like, I don't know how long we're going to get together. Hopefully it's a year. Hopefully it's 2 years. Hopefully it's 3 years. But whatever happens next, I hope that it's bigger and better and more suited to you because of the time that we have together. That to me is not losing. If you leave here for something that's even better, that's not me losing. I don't know if that's a negative way to start. I knew it was a counterintuitive way to start, but what it helped me do was to try to, and I don't know how effective this all was. I was young, they were young, but it helped me set up a culture of self-development and encouraging people to do things differently, encouraging people to build skills. That was my goal with that, the particular strategy team and the culture that I wanted to create there, or help to create. 5th thing that makes strategists happy when advertising campaigns, that they're involved with work. I mean, that's the whole point. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing when that happens. And yes, for a lot of people, winning an award for that kind of work, so winning an award for advertising campaigns that work, it also leads to a little bit of happiness. And again, this is what you talk about, insights, and you sort of bring out the curmudgeons. You talk about awards, you bring out the curmudgeons. I don't believe in awards. I don't, blah, blah. Whatever. It's cool. Do you? Awards, I think, are useful in many agencies because they set clear and high expectations. And according to a lot of research about talent and grit, clear and high expectations matter. It's especially hard to set them in ambiguous industries. So there's a bit of research about this. And so for those of you who get frustrated that the same people seem to get the best jobs in the best agencies, part of that is because they're very good. And part of it's also because when we have to make ambiguous decisions, or decisions among a lot of ambiguity, we look for social signals. Social signals can include where you went to college, if you were lucky enough to go to college or university. They can include awards. They can include the last agency that you worked at. And so that's a big dynamic in this industry, because it's hard to know if someone's good until you've worked with them for a while. And even getting someone to do some kind of assignment before offering them a job, which seems to be pretty common these days. I've only had one company ask me to do one, and I said no. That was about eight years ago, during a few turbulent years. It's funny to reflect back then. I thought a lot of the economic challenges were going to hit about 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I don't know if it's just because I was in the US and the media here is much more hysterical, but I expected some of the drops that we're now seeing to happen back then, and I was not correct. And then the 7th thing that has to make a strategist happy is just being able to learn about the world every day. It's such, if you are a student, the strategy job is so good. It's also good if you're a teacher, but it's definitely good if you're a student, just like learning about people, maybe about yourself, about the world, about culture, about trends. So there you go. There's a few words about insights and a few words about things that make strategists happy. I am trying to think through the formats that I want to play with on the podcast in the future. If you would like to download that insight book, check for the link in the show notes, or you can DM me over on Instagram at Mark Pollard. Hope to see you at one of our events soon, or maybe even teach you next year. Take care. Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.